Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today for another opportunity to have a great in-depth conversation about a topic that really is important for you. And as always, we have this wonderful opportunity to explore, to learn, to heal, and be able to share for our benefit and for the benefit of family and friends. So thanks again for joining me. Always check out my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and also go over to my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, because I always post lots of great information and their special reports, all sorts of goodies to just keep you getting empowered with education, truthful knowledge. Can't go wrong with truthful knowledge. The announcement I have today is that I'm actually going to be facilitating a group going down to Peru to be part of a six-night experience working with plant medicines and shamans. Plant medicines from Peru, and the shamans are from Peru as well. And we're doing this at this luxury resort in Costa Rica. And this luxury resort also, including the three journeys we have with this powerful, healing, transformative plant medicine called ayahuasca, also is facilitating physical healing. We'll be doing colonics and massages. This is the first licensed medical facility for the exploration with plant medicines in the world. So we have doctors on staff, and they also will be doing live blood cell analysis and checking our auras before and after, and daily yoga classes, meditation classes, other different programs are available. It's truly an amazing experience, but what makes it really special is that we're going to be working with the shaman and exploring the healing power of the plant medicine, such as ayahuasca. So go to my website, What Women Must Know, to learn more, or email me directly, Dr. Selman at What Women Must Know, and I'll send you more of the details. It's a very small group, so I just really encourage you, if you're interested, curious, check in with me and see if this is part of your own personal transformational experience in life. And speaking of personal transformations, we are talking with a wonderful teacher, healer, motivational speaker, and author of a new book called Waging Inner Peace, How 5,000 Veterans Use the Ancient Secrets of Yoga and Mindfulness to Reclaim Their Lives from Stress, and How You Can Too. And we're talking with Eric Wahl-Robinstein. And let me just share a little bit about my guest, Eric, today. So he is an author, speaker, and nationally recognized educator in the fields of yoga, mindfulness, and mind-body wellness. Specializing in the translation of ancient wisdom for modern times, Eric is an expert in the practical application of modern technologies from yoga, meditation, and mindfulness for artful, happy, and stress-free living in modern life. In addition to his work with military members and veterans, Eric is the founder of Yoga Pura, one of Arizona's largest yoga and wellness centers, and is the president of BetterBox, a first-of-its-kind company specializing in the creation of customized personal development experiences. His work has been widely featured in the media, including on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, Success Magazine, Yoga Journal, and more. He is the author of Waging Inner Peace, How 5,000 Veterans Use the Ancient Secrets of Yoga and Meditation to Reclaim Their Lives, and You Can Too. And it's my pleasure to welcome Eric to the show today. Eric, welcome.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, it's such a delight to have you here, and I've just been so impressed reading your book and going to your website and learning about you and everything you've been doing to really make a difference in so many people's lives. And I know that you are part of the military or ex-military now, but your heart is there helping military members recover or heal or transform with the practices that you have learned personally and are sharing now. I just think we should begin with your story. So tell us a little bit about how you got to this place.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people, when they look at how I started my career as an Army infantry officer and where I wound up some almost 30 years later, as a kind of a mind-body health expert, a lot of people have some difficulty kind of connecting the dots there, because it seems like in some ways I'm at the opposite end of the spectrum. But the interesting thing is that my journey towards yoga and mindfulness actually began before I even got involved with the military. And this was back in 1980, I want to say, and I was at that time an unfortunate victim of a mugging in Sacramento, California. And I was just a kid then, 17 years old, and I got beat up pretty good and my wallet taken. And you know, to be honest with you, it really wasn't that big of a deal, or at least it didn't seem like it. I had some bumps and bruises and such. But what I didn't realize at the time was that while my physical injuries were relatively minor, I walked away from this incident with some psychological wounds, I guess you could say. And what I look at now is a fairly decent case of chronic stress. And so how that presented for me at the time was that I noticed as I entered any kind of dark enclosed space that looked like that parking garage that I got attacked in, I began to have a stress episode. People who looked like my attackers sent me into a mild grade of panic. And this went on for about 10, 15 years in various different forms, with me not being able to sleep very well and some agitation, difficulty concentrating. And it wasn't until much, much later, as a matter of fact, after I got out of the military, that I began to put two and two together to understand that what was really going on was that I had some stress conditions going on that derived all the way back from this initial attack. And that was the thing that really started me on this journey of exploring these mind-body techniques from yoga and mindfulness and other traditions.
So it sounds like that was a form of traumatic stress that you experienced way back when you were a teenager.
Yeah, I was never formally diagnosed, but it certainly was a stress injury of some sort. Whether or not it was full-blown post-traumatic stress or not is up for debate, but there's no doubt in my mind that I walked away from that with some long-lasting damage to my nervous system that wasn't really reconciled until I began to make conscious and deliberate efforts using some of these techniques from yoga and mindfulness to kind of bring my nervous system back into balance.
And how did your journey lead you to the study and practice of yoga?
Well, I went through my whole military career, which was about 7 years or so, and ended up getting out of the service and moving to San Francisco, California, where I started a career in communications and marketing. And it was there where my symptoms of stress became more and more not only pronounced, but more and more evident, or I became more conscious of them. And I found myself in the subway on certain mornings feeling, you know, a sense of a panic or anxiety, and the insomnia got worse. And nothing was really taking the edge off of it at all. And the funny thing was is that, you know, it's how life moves us in certain directions. I was sitting in my office one day interviewing a candidate for a position I had open, and she had shared with me that she just had returned from a Buddhist meditation retreat in Thailand. And that piqued my interest because I don't really even know why, but I asked her some more questions about it. And then she directed me to a couple of classes and centers in the San Francisco Bay Area that I could go to begin to dip my toes in the water. And I noticed almost immediately that I was getting some really significant relief from these persistent symptoms that nothing else was really able to touch. And so that's what really kind of drew me into these practices.
It's always interesting how life opens up doors that we didn't even know existed that really can not only resolve the pain and health issues that we have, but really change our destiny.
I find that so true. And the funny thing for me, too, is that looking forward or even in the present moment, oftentimes I don't really recognize the doors that are opening, but in the rearview mirror, you can kind of see the synchronicities that came into play in order to push you this way or that. So it's really kind of fascinating.
So then you really took all these practices to heart and devoted a lot more of your time to them.
Well, I did because part of who I am is really a teacher. And that's been true in every single job and career that I've had in my whole adult life. If I look at what I was doing, no matter whether it was in sales and marketing or as a communications director or even in the Army, what I gravitated towards in those environments was working to mentor and teach and help develop the people that were working for me and around me. So it's really just kind of a natural knack or affinity I have for teaching and sharing information and helping people to develop. So as I began to get more and more interested and into the practices of mindfulness and meditation and yoga and such, it was a really, really natural transition for me to get more and more interested in sharing these with others. And so in fairly short order, I think about after 2 years or so of practice, I took a yoga teacher training program, the first of many, together with some meditation and coaching programs and things like that, that really helped me better understand these mind-body technologies and more specifically how to share them with people to help them live happier and lighter as well. And so that's kind of how that transition worked for me.
So did you actually go to places like India to study?
I have been to India to study and to teach both. Not for huge long periods of time, just a couple of weeks here and there. Most of my training has been here stateside in various different Zen centers and yoga centers and ashrams and things like that, combined, of course, with what I think has been the greatest transformational opportunity for me personally is the work that's been done here in my wellness center in Phoenix, because it was taking all of these wonderful gifts of knowledge and technique that I've been fed over the years by my various different teachers. It's here in the center that we really begin to, that I experiment a lot with putting them to work for people in small groups and individual settings. Because one of the things that really interests me about these practices is less about the practice itself, and it's more about helping people to live happier, more empowered lives. So rather than teaching yoga for yoga's sake, I'm more interested in what's happening for any one given individual and how I can use some of these techniques and ideas in order to help them overcome whatever specific obstacle they're experiencing in their life. And that's how I began working with people suffering with stress, because it was such a close subject for me.
So what are some of the practices that you are recommending, you're teaching, some of the things that we need to know to help us live a stress-free life?
Well, for me, it all begins with a foundational understanding, and that's less about the techniques and more about what's going on for us and what's causing our stress in the case of stress. And that foundational piece of understanding has to do with the fact that when we're looking at the stress that we're experiencing in any given moment, that the bulk of it is caused less by our circumstance and more by our dysfunctional reaction to the circumstance. So the unfortunate thing is that most of us have come to believe that our stress is caused by the stressful job or the stressful relationship or the stressful traffic or the stressful health condition, and that part and parcel of these circumstances comes stress. And the truth is that, sure, there is some inherent stress in these various different kinds of circumstances, but the bulk of stress that we experience is actually synthesized within us, and it's something that I call optional stress or optional suffering that's created through a set of largely unexamined habits of mind and attention. So when we first begin to understand and these patterns that are happening within us, then that sets us up to be able to, I like to think of it as armoring ourselves against the stressors in our world so that we can be free to move in our jobs and our relationships and every other part of the world without being beset upon by all of this optional stress.
Well, we're all so reactive to our life and to experiences. I had a friend tell me that she was helping her friend decorate her home, and she was going to put it on the market. So it's a very beautiful home, expensive home. And while this woman was away, they were helping this redecorate and put on the wrong poles on the drawer. And when this woman came home, she went bonkers, you know? I mean, she just went into such a state. Now, I heard that story and I went, oh, my God, isn't that how we create our suffering? Because in the scheme of things, it's insignificant. But what it does to our body when we allow ourselves to get in such a reactive place, it has far-reaching consequences to our health and well-being.
Oh, that's such an important statement that you just made, because the stresses that we are experiencing, and maybe said better, the optional stress that we're creating in our life has a toll on us far beyond what I think really any of us recognize. There's this really interesting statistic that I quote in my book that comes from the United States Centers for Disease Control. And a couple years back, they estimated that 90% of primary care physician visits were some way linked to stress, 90%. And when I first read that statistic, I thought for sure it had to be a misprint. And then I dug a little bit deeper and found that it wasn't a misprint. And then I thought a little bit deeper, and then it became pretty much an obvious fact, because stress affects the nervous system, and the nervous system controls every other system in the body. So when it gets out of balance for whatever reason, it's going to affect our ability to fight off disease. It's going to affect our ability to communicate with people. It's going to affect our ability to do just about everything. And so stress is really literally a killer.
You know, many, many years ago, when I was teaching personal development courses, I had a course called Mind, Breath, and Stress. And we were teaching strategies of how to manage stress and your perception of stress, because it's generally the result of our perception, not so much the events outside, through breath, through understanding how our thoughts create our reality, and giving people strategies. And, you know, that was like 30 years ago, and this, you know, just is something that is so critical at any time, you know, in anyone's life. We need to learn these strategies, and without a roadmap and without putting some practice in place, people will just be reacting all the time to circumstances, to situations, which creates the suffering and pain, and as you were saying, the stress response that contributes to all our chronic illnesses. So I really hear what you're saying. It's so important that people understand we have to, each of us in our own way, would be so well served if they found a practice that they can use to help them navigate through life responsibly and consciously.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And you know, the witnessing the way people were unable to effectively cope with the stressors in their lives was one of the things, and my own experience too, because as I mentioned at the outset here, I was dealing with a fairly well-developed case of chronic stress for over a decade, and never really realized until the very end what was going on for me and where my symptoms were deriving from. And then I saw this, of course, in the Troops and Veterans, which is what led to the work there.
So if you were to offer people some practical steps, people listening, of things they, or practices or exercises that they could begin to look into or to begin to practice to help them master their lives so they can be at cause, not at effect. And I just want to just add an experience that I used to have. I used to get so emotionally caught up with things that I would just let my emotions take me all over the place. And they weren't pleasant emotions, you know, so I was always in some level of depression and upset and just those feelings that come from not feeling worthy, not feeling lovable. Those are the common experiences that most of us go through at some point in our lives. It's not all, throughout our whole lives for some people. And what was a turning point for me was a friend who kept saying to me, "You are not your emotions. You are not that feeling. You are not that thought." And at first, I had no idea what he was talking about. He was just annoying me. I just couldn't get it, you know. And then there was just a moment when it happened, and I was able to realize that I was having this emotion. I wasn't collapsed into being the emotion. And that was really a transformational time for me, because it has allowed me to practice this mindfulness approach where we observe the thoughts, we observe the emotions, you know, that I am having this thought, I am having this emotion, isn't that interesting? I say that a lot. I tell a lot of my patients to say that, isn't that interesting, rather than think I am sad, I am upset, I am depressed. Isn't that interesting? I have this feeling. And it really changed my life. It got me out of these chronic states of depression and helplessness and hopelessness, and it really eliminated the emotional swings that were running and ruining my life, to be totally honest.
Yeah, we have a technique in the book which derives from the bootstrap system, which I should probably mention. The bootstrap yoga system is the 7-week program that was originally created for troops and veterans, which is kind of the centerpiece of the book. And as part of the bootstrap system, and of course the book then, is a technique that we call peaceful coexistence. And it points to the power of exactly what you're talking about, and that has to do with coexisting with what I like to think of as our humanness. I think that a lot of us have this unrealistic idea that some point in the future, if I work hard enough and I do enough work on myself, that I'm going to be able to eliminate unhelpful thoughts and negative emotions and all of the unpleasantness that comes along with living in one of these body-mind things. But the truth of the matter is that you really can't fully escape the discomfort that comes along with being a human being sometimes. And so this technique of peaceful coexistence helps us to do largely what you were talking about with the mindfulness piece, and that is to come into a calm, relaxed, and functional relationship with the inevitable ups and downs of both mind and emotion, so that you don't get so battered by them.
So how does one begin to do that? How does one begin to develop a new habit or a new practice that creates different options of responding to situations?
Well, I'm a little bit different in my approach from most mindful and yoga teachers, in that in this field, a lot of people are hyper-technique focused. And so the recommendation typically is, you know, start a mindfulness practice or start a yoga practice, and then allow those techniques to begin to work on the mind, body, and nervous system so that you realize more calm. And so that's certainly where I started as a teacher, but I've kind of moved into another direction from that, in which, I'll illustrate this with a little bit of a story. In my early work with people, I was recommending that they come to a class, and I was helping them use these relaxation techniques and the yoga postures and yoga breathing and mindfulness to help them relax and to calm the nervous system so that they weren't in such a stressed out fit. And what I noticed over the years was that people would come to a class and they would devote themselves to 90 minutes of very sincere and focused work, and they would end up being very, very relaxed. But within 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of walking out the door, they were right back into their stressed out, angst-ridden states. And so we were helping them to temporarily relax things, but there was something that was really causing them to do a lot of backsliding. And that something, of course, has to do with the habits of thought and attention that we all indulge in to some extent, that are actually causing that optional stress that we talked about before. So my approach and the approach that I've taken with the bootstrap system, the approach that's in the Waging Inner Peace book, really has to do, it all starts with an education process. It has to do with really understanding what are the patterns and the cycles that are going on within me that are giving rise to the stressed out state as a starting place, rather than just throwing techniques at a process that I don't even understand. And it's in that way that we become more skilled and, dare I say, surgical in the application of whatever techniques that I'm employing, because I'm understanding the dysfunctional patterns that I'm trying to interrupt, and I'm using the right tool at the right time in the right way in order to bring things back into balance. So the way that my work flows these days, and what's in the book, is that the whole of the journey really is about, on the first level, a certain level of self-exploration and understanding what's going on with us before we start throwing techniques at things. So the bootstrap system is based on a three-pronged approach. It's recognize, release, and restore. And the recognize has to do with recognizing the unhelpful tendencies that are actually taking me away from my goal, which is a peaceful, harmonious existence. Then I use, once I understand how they work, then I'm set up to employ particular techniques to interrupt those things, and then I can use relaxation techniques to restore the natural relaxed balance to the whole nervous system. So I always begin with the education piece.
Mm-hmm. So can you give us an example of some of the people, some of the students you've worked with and their stories? And what's happened to them when they've used your program, your approach?
Well, since the book is constellated around the military and veteran population, at least from an example point of view, there's one particular veteran that comes to mind for me. His name was Bill, and he was local to us here in Phoenix, Arizona. And Bill was a veteran of the first Gulf War. And he was wrestling with a case of traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, had been subject to years, literally, of pharmaceutical treatments as well as some various different cognitive therapies, and was doing okay. But he came to us because he was looking for something a little bit more and something to really kind of complement the other therapies that he was getting courtesy of the VA. And after about 4 weeks of moving through the program, he shared with me afterwards, he went down to see his regular VA therapist, and almost as soon as he started talking to his therapist stopped him and said, "What have you been doing?" And he said, "What do you mean, what have you been doing? What have you been doing? There's something different about you." And the therapist had noticed right away that Bill's demeanor was significantly calmer, less agitated, present, focused, than it had been in the whole time that he'd been working with him. And of course, Bill shared with him that he was working with some of these yoga and mindfulness techniques that had really kind of helped him to move significantly further down the path. And the thing that was most surprising to me about Bill and his story, and this was completely unexpected for me, is that he reported that the greatest sense of relief that he got was that it's the first time in all of his treatments he finally felt like he was in control, because he had been doing the experiments that we have in the system that help us to recognize and really experience firsthand the dysfunctional patterns that we're engaging in. He began to feel like he knew what was going on with him and knew how he could get in there, and not 100% of the time certainly, but oftentimes get in there and interrupt the pattern. So that gave him a feeling of being in control that he had never ever realized before he started working with these techniques.
Can you elaborate when you say interrupt the pattern? What does that look like?
It might be easiest to give an example. So there's a particular pattern that we talk about in the book called resistance, and what we're talking about primarily is mental and emotional resistance. So if you imagine yourself sitting in traffic and you're going 14 and a half miles an hour in the fast lane on your way to work, nothing's moving and nothing's working, and for most people this episode is a stressful event. And so for most of us, we feel like traffic is stressful. And that's the starting place. What we like to look at this exact same circumstance as is that this traffic isn't really responsible for the stress. It's your resistance to the traffic that's responsible for the stress. In other words, my repeating a little thought in my head that this should not be like this and I should have taken it another way and this should not be like this and they should have built this freeway bigger and this should not be like this and I should be in the HOV lane or this should not be like this. And that kind of mental resistance to what's going on is what's creating this stress mess. Because if we just take and we look at exactly what's happening in the moment, the experience of traffic, what's really happening is you're sitting in a comfortable chair, you're listening to a delightful radio program much like this one, you've got some cool air wafting over your face, and you're watching the countryside pass peacefully by your window. And in the experience itself, there is zero things that are really assaulting you in any way, shape, or form. And yet, the experience is phenomenally stressful for most of us, but that stress comes from our resistance, mental and emotional resistance, to the event. So the degree to which we, first of all, can intellectually understand how this might be true for us, and then using customized experiments, which we have in the book, to begin to experience this firsthand in different scenarios in my life to see, wow, it is true that this pattern of resisting what's happening in the moment, the pattern of resisting the fact that the dishes are in the sink again, unwashed, or the pattern of resisting the fact that my boss didn't say thank you again, or whatever it is really the thing that's responsible for some 90% of the stress, then that opens the door for me to begin to employ some of these other techniques to actually change the habit of resistance to one of a habit of acceptance.
So this is such an important point, because when we can understand that what's causing our pain is we are not accepting what is, and, you know, whether it's family members or whether it's someone at work or it's traffic, then and we, as you say, struggle against it and try to make it something other than what it is, it's that feeling of immense frustration that can lead to anger and all the consequences of that energy in our body, because we're just stuck in trying it to be other than what it is, which can't ever be. It is what it is. And that's what I think one of the most, it can drive people crazy hearing that statement, it is what it is. But on the other hand, it's one of the most profound truths that we have to work with.
Yeah, I think that too often we have come to rely on the future moments to bring us happiness, and then as a result we abdicate any effort to make ourselves happy now. So I think people sitting in traffic, they think, well, why should I relax with this when I can change it? But I think to your point, what we forget is that the moment that you're sitting in traffic, for that moment you're stuck, that you're in traffic for this moment, and this moment can't be any different from the way it is. Sure, subsequent moments might be different, but this moment is the way it is, and people forget that, at least in their behaviors, and as a result, they make a mess of things.
Yeah, and then the other piece, the other corollary to this, is that if we are in situations that, for whatever reason, aren't supporting us or we don't feel appreciated or loved, then we need to learn the strategies that will allow us to make those situations, to change those situations, either change them in a way that we move on in our life somewhere, or we make the changes within ourselves that can profoundly alter the responses we're getting in our life. I mean, this is really part of the book of life that we never got the manual to, you know, that we need to learn.
Right. And I think the important distinction, at least from my perspective, is that those are two distinct efforts. One is the effort to be happy now, and the second one is the effort to be happy in the future or to improve my circumstance. And I think that we forget about the effort to be happy now. It's interesting, when you ask people, when do you want to be happy or when do you want to be stress-free, of course the answer comes back, I want to be now. I want to be happy now, or I want to be stress-free now. But then you ask them in the next breath, So what would it take for you to be happy now? And then they say, well, if I only had $1,000, or if I only had this, or I only had that. And they talk about things being different from now. And so what they're really saying is, I can't be happy now with that statement, because they're saying I can only be happy if things change. And right now, they are the way they are. So a big part of my work has been for decades now to help people figure out how to come into a more healthy relationship with now, no matter what shape it is in, so that they can experience happiness every moment along the way on the journey, rather than postponing it until things conform to their expectation or preferences, which is really how we've been taught to be happy in this culture.
You know, it just brings to mind, you know, earlier I was saying that I have worked with plant medicines, and I find it really fascinating. Obviously, you probably got a sense, Eric, that for the last 30, 40 years of my life, I've been involved with personal development and yoga, and I've been to India, and, you know, just doing all sorts of things for myself and in the work that I do. And I'm always fascinated by how we can transform and heal ourselves, whether it's physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. So I've gotten very interested in the role of plant medicines these days, and I know there's a lot of research going on with plant medicines like ayahuasca. And there's a very interesting video that I was watching that actually visually demonstrated how when we have a trauma, we get wired. Our neural net literally gets wired. So anything, as you were saying, that resembles that initial trauma is part of this wiring that gets fired off. It's like, you know, a dark parking lot, or someone who resembles the size and shape of the person who attacked you. And with practices like yoga and mindfulness meditation, and I will add the plant medicines now to it, it enables us to disengage from those old, literally the wirings, and so you're able to disengage and then rewire your neurology in another pattern that allows you to have a totally different response and perception to situations and yourself.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is that when we talk about the practice of yoga, at its core, this is what we're doing. In popular culture, we look at yoga and we look at the, you know, the bending and the twisting and the sweating and the huffing and the puffing and all of that type of thing. But when it's done intentionally and in its original context, what you're really up to is attempting to rewire your nervous system and all of your neurology in a way that it is able to more calmly experience the moment no matter what's going on. So whether or not you're in an intense situation and it's uncomfortable, whether you're able to do something or not do something, whether you're the worst one in class and the best one in the class, whether your mind is distracted, what you're really trying to do is to do this programming that you're pointing towards, so that as you begin to be more and more calm and functionally present to what's happening in the yoga class, this is what we call a transferable skill, right? So the disappointments that arise as a part of me doing a yoga posture, when I get more and more comfortable with those disappointments, I also get more and more comfortable with the disappointments that are inevitable in my life, like the traffic jam or the dishes in the sink or a health challenge. So that programming is really at the crux of why these traditions work so powerfully.
And they are very powerful. I had a guest on my show, I guess a couple of years ago now, who had, he was a war correspondent. He was under a tremendous amount of stress and trauma. He had broken his back, and he had to wear a brace for many years. He was in chronic pain, got addicted to pain meds. He put on a lot of weight. He also was diagnosed, I think, with like throat cancer that supposedly was incurable. So this was his state, and he was an alcoholic. And he had a two-year-old child, and it was that two-year-old child who came to him one day and said, you know, Daddy, you want to play? That said, oh, my God, you know, if I'm going to die, then at least I want to die being able to have some time with my son. So he went to a retreat center, and in that retreat center, he did a yoga class. Now imagine, this guy has a brace from his waist up. He's in chronic pain. I said, how did you do yoga? He said, I breathe. And it was a light bulb that went off for him when he encountered this class. He knew nothing about it. And he went back home and he started to learn yoga and practice. And he just went whole hog into it. And he started reading the ancient texts and practicing. And the end result of this man, who was dying of cancer, was alcoholic, addicted to pains, and chronically disabled. He healed his body, he healed his mind, he healed his emotions, and he went on to become a yoga teacher, developed his own yoga center, and totally transformed his life. Now that is powerful, and a powerful example of everything we're talking about. We have this amazing capacity if we open ourselves and put the discipline and the strategies in place to totally transform and transcend whatever has happened to us in the past.
Yeah, I think that it's easy to forget that your body and mind are seeking health and harmony and balance. And they have, to a very large degree, a capacity to create that if only we can remove the obstacles to it. And those obstacles can be obstacles of thought, they can be obstacles of belief, they can be certainly obstacles of lethargy and an unwillingness to care for the physical self. But the interesting thing is, and I think that this is really, there's all of these stories that you hear about these miraculous healings, like the gentleman you were just referring to. And the fact is, if you look at what these people have done in order to find this balance and healing, is they've really just extracted all of the unhelpful patterns of behavior and thought and the rest of it, and the body and the mind take care of the rest in terms of bringing us back to health and harmony. It's quite magical.
So how do people begin? I mean, is your book giving them the strategies that they can follow? I know you have an online program. What would you suggest to people who are going, okay, I'm ready, I want to make some changes in my life, where do I go? What's the next step?
The book itself contains the entire bootstrap yoga program in it, which is from the external point of view about stress, but truly it's more about really managing our humanness, whether that has to do with stress or any number of other things that tend to get in our way of our healthiest, happiest lives. And so within the book itself, there are 7 weekly lessons. Each one of those weekly lessons is paired with daily practices taking less than 40 minutes a day. And there's downloadable audios that you also get along with the book. And it takes you through the entire Bootstrap program to help you better understand what's going on under the hoods of these body minds, and then giving you the experiments you need to witness firsthand some of the unhelpful patterns that you might have going on for yourself, and then giving you techniques to interrupt them. So that's the logical starting place. I do want to mention, however, that our online program for troops and veterans is 100% free of charge. And for anyone listening who is a service member, a veteran, or knows somebody who's a service member or veteran struggling with stress, that they can go to our website at bootstrapusa.com. That's bootstrapusa.com, and sign up for the online program completely free of charge. So I just wanted to make sure that that gets out there as well.
Well, that's fantastic. What about your certification training? Can you talk a little bit about that program?
Yeah, a couple times a year we hold a Bootstrap instructor course. And what this does is it really arms helping professionals primarily, but we've had a fair amount of spouses and friends and even service members and veterans themselves come through. And it trains them to utilize the Bootstrap program together with the audiovisual resources that we provide them to teach the system in small group and individual settings. And the training program itself is also offered online, because we've got need all over the country that we couldn't meet by traveling even if we wanted to. So it's an 8-week course that's available online as well. And all of that information is also at bootstrapusa.com.
So it's creating the the teachings and the practices that people can either use for their own personal life or learn so they can share it with others.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful, wonderful work, wonderful service you're offering.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
The most important thing that I have learned in my life is that we have to find a discipline that we will stick with to help us change these patterns. We've all come in with our, you know, craziness. We all come in with our challenges in life, or our pain and suffering, and some of us more than others, so it seems. But it doesn't really matter, because even if we haven't had a terrible childhood, you can be in as much pain if it looked good from the outside, but still the decisions and choices we make it really a source of a tremendous amount of pain. So it doesn't, you know, we all carry this pain within us. It's just part of the journey of being human to emerge into a greater connection with ourselves. I think of it as grist for the mill. So we all have to, at some point, if you want out of the pain, you have to do something different. And you have, right? You have to find something else that's going to give you the tools and resources. And this is what I hear you doing, Eric, in your work, in your center, and in your programs, and in, through your book as well. You're sharing what you've developed. And, you know, everyone is attracted to whoever, you know, is the right person for them, however it goes. But people have to take action at some point and take the steps. Do you want to share some of your thoughts about that?
Well, I think one of my biggest missions in life is to help people begin to create a habit of taking care of their mental and emotional selves in the same way that we've created a habit of taking care of our physical selves. You know, every morning I get up and I brush my teeth. Some mornings I don't feel like brushing my teeth, but you know what? I brush my teeth anyway, because I've learned that it's really important to take care of my physical structure. So I eat right and I do some exercise. So everybody, one of us, has a ritual or a set of habits that we do to take care of our physical selves, but very few of us have been taught to create the same kind of rituals or the same kind of habits to take care of our mental and emotional selves. But it's just as critical. So my greatest hope with this work is to help people to come to that realization and to begin to create small little habits that help them keep a healthy mental and emotional state as well as the physical state, so that we all can live happier and healthier no matter what circumstances we live in.
So, Eric, if you were to give one simple little strategy to people listening now to help them begin to find their way out of their pain and suffering, what would it be?
The easiest and simplest thing that everybody has access to is to do a simple meditation practice. Even something as small as just sitting down for 10 minutes in the morning before you start your day, closing the eyes and just focusing on the inhale and the exhale for just 10 short minutes over time can have a really, really tremendous effect on a surprising number of facets of one's life. So that's the easiest place for people to begin, simply because there's nowhere to go. You don't have to buy anything. It's always accessible. And if we can create that habit, that's a fantastic stepping stone to move forward from that.
And, you know, it's always important to remember that all the great spiritual traditions had breathing as one of the core practices for their transformation and healing, spiritual awakening. It's all there within us in our breath.
Yeah, it is for sure.
So okay, folks, those of you listening, that would be what I would suggest you do, is you just take 10 minutes out of your day. I like to do it first thing in the morning myself before I get too busy and distracted, and just do 10 minutes of deep, slow, relaxed breathing. And just notice how you feel when you do that. Anything else you want to add to that recommendation, Eric?
I think that in the spirit of giving people only enough that they can comfortably chew at one time, I think that's enough.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what's really important for people who are at some place in their life where they don't want that that's just not pleasant for them. You know, it's taking, they're not accessing that place that you talked about of joy and of inner peace and happiness right now. Begin with breathing. So, you know, I'd love people to try that if they haven't put a little practice of some sort into their lives. And even if you have, let me know. Let me know what happens. So, Eric, as we come to the end of the show, is there something on the horizon for you that your next project involves?
Well, we're working a lot, of course, on getting the book and these teachings out to as many people as we can all across the country. So that's really kind of where we're focusing most of our effort right now. The work continues here at the center in Phoenix, Arizona, and so that's happening as well. And so lots of exciting things happening. The greatest gift, of course, is just working with people and seeing the transformation that happens as a result of their effort and connection with these techniques. And so I'm just looking forward to more and more of that.
And what is the best website for people to go to visit?
I would recommend the Bootstrap website, which is bootstrapusa.com, because that's the place where you're going to have the full suite of the Bootstrap program that has the multimedia aspects or multimedia assets as well as the free services for troops and veterans. And, of course, the book is available there too.
And I think we just want to say for one more time that you're offering these programs free to servicemen and to veterans, or service persons and veterans, so they can support themselves and get the benefit and create a happy life for themselves, which is a wonderful service, Eric, that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you.
So everyone, check out Waging Inner Peace by my guest, Eric Wall-Rabenstein, and start putting those practices, start learning, start healing. Eric, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show today. You're doing great work. I just really enjoyed our conversation and wish you and the wonderful things you're creating the greatest success.
Oh, it's been a joy. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
You're so welcome. And to all of you listening today, thank you for joining me. I hope you will, you know, just get into some action in your life. Just do something that's going to allow things to bring you that place of inner peace and well-being. Maybe it's just breathe in and breathing out. And whatever it is, I just wish you all the best. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self.